these types of interventions are not helpful.
And you are a regular working person who commutes every day to a job.
Yeah, I have a job, too.
You have one job or two jobs at the moment?
I have one job, but it's at two sites.
At two sites. And this has to do with finding other people housing and helping them.
Yeah, ironically, it does. Uh-huh. Well, I don't actually find people housing. I'm a supervisor, so I supervise the case managers and, I supervise the process.
Mm-hmm.
I supervise the facility, and I make sure everything is safe. I handle incident reports. I make sure, because a lot of our residents are, unfortunately, elderly and disabled, and that comes with a whole set of issues, too, even when they're temporarily housed. You know, a lot of them have doctor's visits and dialysis and end up in the hospital, and, I'm also in charge of tracking that and taking notes and making sure, I do wellness checks. If we haven't heard from a participant in 3 days, I have to check on them and make sure there's not a dead body in their room.
How many clients would you say?
It's also a very high stress job that not everyone can do.
How many clients would you say you are responsible for?
Oh, there's like 110 at one site. That includes individuals and couples. And then at the other site, I think we currently have just shy of 80.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, what are the prospects for these?
That doesn't include our staff team. That just includes the participants that are temporarily housed there.
And are the wages sufficient to pay for you're also taking care of three children, correct?
Correct.
And a disabled partner, correct?
Correct. I mean, I make decent money hourly. I mean, it's not the wage, I guess, take care of everyone. I mean, I still struggle. I'm not ashamed to say what I make per hour. A lot of people know. I make $32.19 an hour.
How many hours a week?
It's part-time at this point, so I'm lucky if I can get more than 3 days a week. I've been trying to get more than 3 days a week. So one of the issues is that I work when my program manager is not there. So I kind of essentially fill in when the head boss isn't there. So I am lucky sometimes. I get to work most holidays. I guess that's unlucky for some people, but it gives me extra, extra pay.
And this is over this is over the hill, right?
Yeah.
So I
work holidays. I pick up every extra shift when someone calls in that I can.
And this is commute, so there's commute time and expense coming and going.
Yeah.
And you also have to arrange for childcare for your three children.
Well, Eric just recently had a
Eric is
surgery
your partner.
For his epilepsy, so he's actually more independent with watching the kids and stuff, but I do always have, backup and support, in case he has a seizure or something when I'm working.
And Eric is still fighting to recover damages suffered under police department assault?
Yes. I'm not sure how that's going to look. They may end up with, having, qualified immunity and get away with beating him up, but I don't know yet. I'm not entirely sure. Mm-hmm. Either way, I still hold a major grudge about that, and I don't feel comfortable. That's a whole separate subject. Thanks for asking. I don't feel comfortable around the police department. I don't want those fuckers near my family. They mistook on January 5th of last year. Eric was walking from Delaware to 7-Eleven to get a fucking Slurpee, and he had a seizure, and instead of helping him, the police mistook him for somebody being on drugs. They beat the crap out of him, left him with severe injuries, blunt force trauma to his ribs, all sorts of injuries, and PTSD that he was actually diagnosed with from that incident. And so I am just not comfortable at all with the police. That was a day after I believe that was just a few days after the lawsuit for the Benchlands was successful. I almost feel like that was targeted on my family, although coincidence that he had a seizure and they were able to get him, I guess, like that. So I don't know. But I just feel like maybe someone did recognize him, it's Alicia's partner, I don't know. That's just speculation. Maybe that's a little conspiracy theory. I'm not entirely sure, but I just feel like targeted by that whole situation, instead of getting the support that we need for trying to do right by the community, it turns into targeting and police brutality and, you know, shit like that.
And another one of your close associates was also attacked and successfully sued, correct?
Yeah.
So it seems like your attempt to raise the issues may have provoked this kind of retaliation.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not ruling that out.
Right. Indeed. I mean, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I would raise that issue as well. Regarding the benchlands, which you brought up, you've been a defender of the rights of people to use the benchlands, and you were part of the original lawsuit organizing it that stopped the police clearing initially of the upper duck pond area benchlands, and then accepted the deal in the benchlands until it was vacated in June of 2021. But the city then kind of turned around and said, okay, well, we'll call this a sanctuary campground or a sanctified,
yeah,
whatever the heck they're calling it.
They did a terrible job at managing it.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. What's your interpretation? What's your sense of it? I know there used to be homeless union banners in the benchlands. I don't see too many now. And I know that you and Keith, as the main leaders of the union, have, you know, you've been distracted by as the kind of stuff you're talking about. And Keith has been trying to run a food program, you know, that the city refuses to do.
Well, so. I've been dealing with a lot. And I look at it like, you know, a couple things. Like, I won't say, like, we did our duty there and, like, that's that, of course, but, like, you know, when it was time to step up, I think we did a very important thing. We protected the community from having all those people evicted in the height of COVID-19 before there was even vaccinations available to people. So, and the city was going to break CDC guidelines. We stopped them from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In response to that, yeah, they kept it there. They hired that Jeremy Leonard guy who basically, like, tyrants around, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, he's a dick. I really don't like him. I think he has a power trip and a really bad attitude. He's not willing to, like, work with activists or, you know, advocates. He's just really rude. And for in that position, I don't think he's the right choice at all. And then they're not really doing much for that encampment. You know, it very similarly looks like the other encampments that the city has complained about, you know, with health and safety, this and that, that they didn't like. You know, now it's funny that, you know, funny but not, that the one that they're supposedly managing very much echoes previous ones. You know, it's not that much better now that the city's in control, is what I'm getting at.
You're referring to the benchlands.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, of course, not the fault of people. I mean, yeah, there are people who are homeless who have mental health issues. Some people have that. You will get a mixed batch in every group. So there will be a couple hoarders, a couple people who have got a lot of bike parts, blah, 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 blah. But in general, the city hasn't supported that camp like they should either to make it a nice, you know, managed place like they always say that they would if they were doing something. I don't know. So, but, and in response to that, like, I feel like we locked it down. Everyone's had a chance to stay there. You know, the city said that they were going to manage it. You know, the homeless union definitely has people still there. I mean, I go there and visit. I was there when it was flooding, helping, you know, people that are disabled get out of there and taking them to the emergency spot, you know, when the city kind of failed there too.
Yep.
So we have not just, like, abandoned it, but, I mean, there's only so much I can currently do right now.
I wasn't looking so much for your current personal involvement. I was wondering, because I know I suggested to you that the homeless union needs to find other people that, and I don't mean you personally, Alicia, I mean that, you know, those who are concerned about the union need to find people who want to take organizing positions and do the kind of work that needs to be done. And it's better, of course, if it's people who are without housing themselves, although often those folks are particularly challenged.
Right now they have those individuals you're talking about have done some things. Like, there's the appeal regarding the oversized vehicle ordinance and things like that that have already gone through. I mean, there are people besides the homeless union and people who work with the homeless union who are doing things.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
So, and there are a lot of things happening. And I think we are all working right now, like, in the avenues that we can do something about and work on right now.
Mm-hmm. I know that in some places there have been lawsuits that have been leveled. Any indication of some? And, of course, Anthony Prince has been trying to do what he's been doing to assist particular people like yourself who are, you know, under threat by police. Has there been much? I guess the Union of the Homeless itself really hasn't done any meeting for the last couple of months. Do you hear anything about?
We haven't done any meeting, but I can tell you, and as far as lawsuits go, you know, I am not sure how everything is going to end up. I mean, I signed a retainer agreement with the ACLU, so they represent me for matters regarding the oversized vehicle ordinance. Uh-huh. And so my hope is that if that all does start being enforced, that there will be some legal action regarding that.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the idea is to head it off at the pass before it even gets there by an effective appeal to the Coastal Commission, which was successful 5 or 6 years ago when I did it, and that was good, even though I don't even live in a vehicle, and I'm not a member of the ACLU.
If it can be stopped on that level before, you know, it reaches enforcement and lawsuit, that would be great.
Although it has to be said that most people who are outside do not live in vehicles, and therefore, you know, it's so much that other, the nasty revamped camping ban that's coming up, the CSSO ordinance, is one of the real problems. And they're claiming now, I think you may know, that because they've declared the benchlands is their campground, that everybody has a campground, and if you don't get into the benchlands, we're going to, you know, ticket you, arrest you, fine you, and that sort of thing.
And that is still a violation of Martin versus Boise.
Of course it is.
As far as I'm concerned.
Well, that being the case, though, the question is, who's going to enforce it? And, I mean, you have some sympathetic people. You have the Santa Cruz Cares group. You have, you know,
well,
sanitation for the
people.
We're
not at a position yet, so that is like a, I don't know, a weird, shitty situation when it comes to this. So the city so far has just done these ordinance, talked about it, and then kind of like danced around how it's going to look. So far, they have not enforced these things.
Oh, but they have. They haven't really enforced it by calling the ordinance. What they've done is they've gone and cleared the camps at highways.
They haven't issued any camping citations and or done their specific ordinance. So it has to go, like, I believe Andy Mills said, warning. How did he say it? Warning, citation, arrest.
Something like that. But you see, most people are scared.
And then as far as the other one goes, it's like something similar. It's like citation, misdemeanor.
But you know that if...
So when they start doing that is when we have a case.
Yes, but you know that if the police can bully people into moving under threat of you losing their property and getting hurt, they don't need to issue citations at all. They just act like thugs and do what they're doing. And the question is,
well, and that could be a case as well. That's also leading towards harassment of people.
But it hasn't.
I don't know. Shit like that builds over time,
but
we document it, and we discuss it.
Hasn't been a case, though, for Highway 1.
The courts have to be really persuaded, so you have to make sure that, I mean, you've been there. You've seen how the courts act. You could have a lot of evidence and a lot of testimony, and the court could still not be persuaded. So it's a slippery slope.
I'm just saying to you that the Highway 1 and the Highway 9 removal of at least 100 people, and then the removal of people in Camp Paradise
They've done several.
They have done that, and there's been no response from either Huff or from Union or from Santa Cruz Cares or from the Sanitation for the People or Nomad, any of these groups that were there a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I think is because we're all...
I can speak for myself that I don't have the energy manpower to tackle encampment and injunction.
Of course. You've demonstrated
a giant situation, though.
Yeah, no,
obviously, we are compelled.
I mean, the thing is, if they pick people off piecemeal by this, that is likely what they're doing.
That's why I say stick together. I mean, and that's why people stay in larger encampments. It's also safety. That's why I keep trying to tell people in the city.
Yeah,
it's not just people like to be around other people. And
but remember,
you know, in some cases it's for safety.
Right, but remember,
and community.
Remember though that the, you know, the Highway 1 and Highway 9, Highway 1 and Highway 9 was a larger encampment. Camp Paradise was a huge encampment, you know. And it's bigger, it was bigger, as big as the Benchlands. They moved in and they destroyed it. And so, I mean, they moved it, I guess, to the Hell's Trail area.
I don't think it was bigger than the Benchlands.
It looked, it seemed to go on forever when I walked it, but you're probably right. Yeah, I mean, but it was still...
I don't know, and that's the one that caught on fire, too, I believe, had a major fire.
A small part of it, you know, for briefly. I mean, it was...
Well, I saw that fire. That was kind of scary. I saw that fire. I was driving by the cemetery, and it was, like, really going.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I was told by somebody who came running out of the bushes that it was a propane tank. So,
right.
You know, I get that that's not safe.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't think they moved on it because of a safety issue. I think they...
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to deny, because I think we have to address and be honest about some issues and not, I mean, I think that's how we change the narrative, too. It's not avoiding the truth of some things. You know, some things are not safe. Some, you know, people need to live a little bit better. And with support, probably could. But I'm not going to deny that some things happen, you know.
No, no, it's not denying they happen. But to claim that they're a pretext for moving 50 to 100 people is ridiculous, as far as I'm concerned. And particularly when you have no place to go but shove them into the overcrowded, flood-endangered Benchlands.
I don't know. That wasn't a good space. They were under, like, all those alcoves and under all those eucalyptus trees, and they really went under a blaze. But I don't know if that many people in that one small, tiny little spot was good.
Did you ever...
Moving them might have been better, but I don't know what that plan was. I didn't follow it, so I'm not saying they went to a better situation.
Yeah, have you ever walked the Camp Paradise area?
Yes. A few times.
Yeah, to me, it's just amazing how long it was. I mean, huge. It seemed to go on forever.
Extremely condensed, though, in like an alley almost.
It was one path. There was some little subsidiary paths that went off. Well, listen, you've fielded the kids, and you're trying to get off to the gym. So I'm going to let you go. But let me give you an opportunity to cover anything that you haven't said that you may want to. Anything coming up that you think we should know about, and so forth?
No, I mean, not really. I just think everyone should be rooting for people to get into housing. It's better for our entire community. That's what I'm trying to do for myself. That's what I would like to see, you know, for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they are mentally ill or on drugs, they are better housed than in the Benchlands or in a tent somewhere.
Or on
with propane tank.
Or on
I mean, it's better for all of us to do something about it.
Or on the sidewalk.
And if we could stop the division and the, you know, these useless, banterous meetings of bullshit and just get to the housing, it would save us all time, money, and effort.
And, of course, people can still reach you as a union activist, or you would like a little kind of people to maybe call someone else for a while?
I mean, you can reach me or Keith. We are still both partners in the homeless union here.
And your number is, of course?
831-431-7766.
Thank you, Alicia.
All right, thanks, Robert.
All right, babe. Bye-bye.
So, before you hear this song by Sting called "The Russians Love Their Children Too," about the lyrics. And maybe it's called "Fields of Gold." In Europe and America, there's a growing feeling of hysteria, conditioned to respond to all the threats in the rhetorical speeches of the Soviets. Mr. Khrushchev said, "We will bury you." I don't subscribe to this point of view. It would be such an ignorant thing to do if the Russians love their children too. How can I save my little boy from Oppenheimer's deadly toy? There is no monopoly of common sense on either side of the political fence. We share the same biology, regardless of ideology. Believe me when I say to you, I hope the Russians love their children too. There is no historical precedent to put words in the mouth of the president. There's no such thing as a winnable war. It's a lie we don't believe anymore. Mr. Reagan says we will protect you. I don't subscribe to this point of view. Believe me when I say to you, I hope the Russians love their children too. We share the same biology, regardless of ideology. What might save us, me and you, is that the Russians love their children too. And the last interview before a possible flashback is an interview with Kevin, who is a van dweller. He's the guy who you heard earlier meeting with Reggie Meisler and deciding to become a part of the appeal of the OVO ordinance, the get out of town, all you RV dwellers ordinance passed by the NIMBY City Council. Here's a interview with him.
On the line with Kevin, who may be one of the new plaintiffs in the OVO challenge to their trying to make it illegal for vans to exist at night in Santa Cruz and also restrict them severely during the day. And you're also, you've been coming to Huff meetings, as I recall, Kevin, and you're also doing other stuff. What else have you been doing there? What's going on?
I don't know, just living life, living the van life. And
how long have you been in the van?
There. Huh?
How long have you been van man?
Almost 4 years van man.
And have you been van man mostly in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Here, but we'll soon branch out. I branched out a little bit up to Boulder Creek. I love hanging out up there now in the mountains next to the Babbling Brook.
Well, you know, I just heard, I just met you a couple months ago, and you came to a Huff meeting. How did that happen?
I was chowing down at Lot 27, Food Not Bombs, on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And you, Robert, walked up with your little dictator and dictation machine, that is.
Indeed. Well, serves two purposes, yes. Go ahead.
Yes. And the rest is history. And here we are today.
Well, I know that you then spent some time kind of trying to help out folks struggling with the rain and the authorities in Watsonville.
Did do that. Went out there. That was early December when it was raining, and the folks had to get out of the Pajaro River bottom. We're being run out by Monterey County authorities, so we helped them relocate to Lot 20. That was whatever.
27.
The lee of the levee.
Oh, yeah, it was another,
side of the river.
Watsonville lot. Yeah,
there, the Bridge Street, they called it a Bridge Street parking lot.
Right, and then they after they located there, they were given, I know that they went eventually two lots, and then they were forced to disperse, then they were attacked again on the river, and I don't even know what's happened to them recently. I may have to get a hold of Monica Tone, the union person there, but I haven't been able to reach her because she was ill for a while in the hospital with COVID, I understand.
Yes, that's what I heard, too. Yeah, those poor folks have been chased all over creation, run out of here and there, and they just keep moving and so on.
Well, I know I was rambling on about, or raging on about, there not being enough stuff that Huff is actually doing rather than just chattering about. Huff, of course, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group that meets every week and does a lot of chattering and chewing and eating cookies and things like that. But we all decided to, I was pushing people to do it, and people seemed interested in doing this protest next Tuesday. It'll be coming up in a few days. I guess it's day after tomorrow if you're listening to this on Sunday. I guess it'll be the 13th, and the protest is on the 15th. Get your taxes in and also come to a protest at noon at a sidewalk in front of O'Neill's downtown. But that's going to be against the OVO. We're hoping to have some petitions and some flyers and say, come on, everybody, let's do the right thing and not be hornswoggled by the Santa Cruz City Council and their latest schemes. But you signed on. The reason that going through this long rigmarole here on this long discussion here is kind of a background to, you also kind of decided, when requested by Reggie Meisler, who's an activist that I was able to reach by phone at the Huff meeting on Thursday, who actually filed an appeal against this oversized vehicle ordinance, the OVO. And you have an oversized vehicle yourself, right? Or do you?
No, mine's just undersized.
Oh, you just...
Turns out, Reggie apprised me that it's not the OVO ordinance isn't 30 feet and longer, it's 20 feet and longer.
Right.
And he actually looked up the length of this model GMC van that I live in, and it's like 17 or 18 feet. So I think it's shorter than that, but whatever. So I'm under. But I was shocked to find out it's 20 feet and over. So they're really getting hardcore about this. 20 feet or over length is, is not acceptable. And I think they still have the over 7 feet in height. Which would include things like air conditioners or whatever is fixed to the roof of a rolling dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
the nuts and bolts and complications of what Reggie put down there and stuff, but he put it together, and then gave it a personal touch and flavored it a bit with, you know, my experiences as a vehicle dweller and so on and so forth.
Even though your vehicle isn't restricted by it, you are concerned about it. Why did you say you were concerned if your vehicle doesn't apply?
Well, I don't recall saying I was concerned. I'm not, because I'm real stealth. I'm way below the radar. My vehicle, it's a cargo van, and it's a white cargo van, and it looks like a white cargo van. It doesn't have anything dangling off the outside of it like Job's Ford, and it doesn't. There's nothing piled on the top or out the back end or anywhere. It's later model, so it looks neat and clean and tidy. So I'm low profile and stealth. So.
Well, I'm just wondering why did Reggie feel it would be good for you to be one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit? I guess it's not in this appeal. It's not really a lawsuit.
Because I volunteered to be. Huh. I was available for it. And volunteered, you know, that at the Huff meeting, you know, when he called us, or he called him from the Huff meeting, and I said, I volunteer to put my John Hancock on this document, and we submit it to city clerk, et cetera.
Well, that's why I said you're concerned, because you apparently aren't concerned about your own vehicle, but you're concerned about the fate of other people. Is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, that other folks can just keep on living their lives the way they are in their vehicles.
And I guess you were afraid
that matters.
When Reggie spoke to us, I think he was afraid, and I presume you were too, that the deadline was Monday, and so you went on Friday, that's the day after our meeting, to the clerk, but they were closed on Friday, strangely enough.
Yes.
And then
closed Friday. Reggie submitted the document by email. Mm-hmm. If needs be, we'll go in on Monday, walk into the city hall physically with a hard copy and present it also.
Gotcha.
But he wasn't sure that they would accept an email, but I don't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I usually do a lot of my Public Records Act requests by email, but it's good, dude, to dot all your I's and make it T's crossing them and so forth.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also, and this is one of the reasons that I kind of dragged you into this conversation or encouraged you to do it, is that you also had an opportunity to meet the president of the Homeless Union, Alicia Cool, who also lives in her van. Is that true?
I did not actually meet her. Reggie apprised me of Alicia's situation, so I cruised out west of Delaware Avenue and located her rig parked there, and sauntered past it and back past it again just to sort of check out her situation. Mm-hmm. And so on. So I didn't meet her and speak with her. Mm. My understanding is she's not well. I don't know. She's not well.
She always sounds she sounds perky when I talk to her, but when I talked to her, I guess it was either Thursday or Friday, but I don't know. I can't really say what her health is, but I know she expressed an interest too in being a plaintiff in Reggie's appeal of this ordinance. So what did you find out there at the this was out near the Homeless Garden Project, right?
Yeah, out west Delaware, west of Swift Street. Swift being the cross street to Delaware, and then further out is the Homeless Garden. She was just a ways out with her trailer, and it was hooked up to a pickup truck and so on. And I was out there until near midnight last night at the Homeless Garden before rolling back into town. And when I came back by, she had a generator going to power some lights and whatnot inside. So I saw her setup, her get up and all. And I didn't want to approach and freak her out, you know, as strangers coming up, because she's been hassled so much. Mm-hmm. She just sees some guy just walk up. Had she stepped out of her trailer, and I was able to alert her of my presence from a distance and and want to help out, mm-hmm. I've done that. But that may happen in the future, because I would like to meet her and let her know we're helping. We care about her.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, since, you know, you are kind of engaged in a common pursuit, so to speak, which is justice for people in their vans to be treated, you know, fairly. Would you mind if I put you in touch with her by phone right now?
No, not at all.
Let me see if I can do
that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Don't go away. Let's see if that works. May or may not work. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're giving her a call, see if we can...
Hello?
Alicia.
Yes?
It's Robert, and I'm recording this for Sunday's show, and I have just wanted to introduce you to Kevin, who Reggie Meisler is also kind of going in with to try to challenge the OVO law. He wanted to meet you. Are you up to say hello to Kevin?
Yes, I'm at work, though. I'm only have about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, we can do this quickly. Kevin, meet Alicia. Alicia, meet Kevin.
Hi, Alicia.
Hello.
Nice to meet you. Hi.
We've never met before?
No, we have not. I'm also a vehicle dweller, so I care about other vehicle dwellers, and we want to help out you folks. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know there's a wide range of types of people living in vehicles. So I always wonder, like, I mean, I don't want to be, I guess, too direct, but are you, like, a respectful vehicle dweller? You know?
Yeah.
The kind that doesn't trash the neighborhood and things like that. I mean, it is a minority that does that, and I know that's a false narrative, but they do exist.
Yes, I am certainly not one of those. I'm very low-key. My whole rig is tapped down. It's just a van, a white cargo van.
That's cool.
It's neat and tidy. I don't litter or leave or
That's good.
Eat in the gutters or anything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, neither do we, and we try to stay clear and try to stay with like-minded people because we're really trying to change the narrative that, you know, most of us, in fact, are not like that.
Yes. Yes, well, I just learned about you yesterday. From this young man named Reggie, who I worked with yesterday to submit an appeal to City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
The appeal was submitted, you know, about the OVO. And so he mentioned you, and so I cruised out West Delaware yesterday and located your trailer and sort of strolled past and strolled by again and didn't want a lock.
I don't think that was mine. I don't park on Delaware.
Oh, okay. So there was a trailer there hooked to up to a pickup truck, and I was thinking, Reggie said you live in a in a house trailer.
No, I actually have an RV. I have It's a 23-foot Tioga Montara RV, but I don't park in the range of other people though.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
You're smart. Yeah. Okay, so that was a different person. Good thing I didn't walk up to the door and knock and say, hi, are you Alicia?
They might have known me. I mean, I know a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, if you want to take down my number, I'm glad to, like, actually meet with you in person or, you know, offer support and, like, do all the things. I'm at work right now.
Sure. At a different time, you can take my number or however you want to do this. Robert, he's going to put some of this on air. I guess he'll edit out the parts where phone numbers.
Alicia, anything you want to say in the last 30 seconds or however that you have in your break and your work? I know you're working over the hill right now, or wherever you're working.
No, just that I get off at 4 so I can have a more extensive conversation, you know, around the 4 o'clock mark.
Okay.
And in general, I would just try to avoid actually probably parking near a lot of other people, especially Delaware. I noticed that those individuals tend to get ticketed, like, on a daily basis versus, like, you know, weekly or monthly.
Wow.
Oh, yes. There were tickets under the windshield wipers of multiple on the same vehicle.
Yeah.
Been they were well-weathered. They've been flapping in the breeze for a few days or weeks.
Yeah, so that's a well-known route.
Yes, it is. Yeah, well aware.
That the police, yeah, will use, and their parking enforcement.
Yes, I have my spots. I know where to go.
Yeah, keep those private and don't tell anyone else about them.
That's why I said I have my spots. I don't, and I never ask another vehicle dweller about their spots. It's all confidential. You know, where they go is their business, where I go is mine, and so on and so forth. Unless the person wants to divulge their location. Their spots where they like to park. That's different.
Let me call you back, Alicia, after four and see if you got some more thoughts about this that you think should go out.
I have a lot to say today, actually. I'm kind of on a roll. I've been typing all day and reading things online that irritate me and commenting on them. So.
Good. I'll call you back and we'll let you, you know, explode to the world.
All right. It's somewhat therapeutic sometimes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Nice to meet you, Alicia.
So nice to meet you. Okay. Bye, Kevin.
And I think you're still there, Kevin?
Hey, now.
Okay. So I think Alicia's gone, but anything you want to conclude with or any thoughts you have that we haven't gotten into?
No, nothing. Oh, nothing. Just some small talk. It was neat to go out to the homeless garden yesterday, and people were busily sowing, putting in the spring plantings. It's that time of year, and sowing seeds and getting things, beds going, and food growing, and so on and so forth. So that was really cool. That's a lovely spot to hang out there, coyote chipping after dark and stuff on the edge of town there. Quiet, very, just a whoosh of cars on Highway 1.
How long were you out there for?
Gosh, near a good 12 hours, I would say.
Did you meet anybody there at all? Anybody talk to anyone?
Let's see. Well, one guy, one of the gardener guys, a couple of motor policemen on motorcycles came by and stopped outside the garden entrance and stopped for a minute, and they were just BSing with one another about making small talk about something one or the other of them had done for a vacation or a trip, I don't know. And then the guy kind of came out, this gardener guy came out, and he was grumbling, what are they stopping here for? I don't want to, you know, this is something, he doesn't like it when they stop there. So that was all.
I got
that one guy.
Well, next time you guys can whoop it up together or get in touch. And if you get in touch with Alicia at another time when she's not working, you maybe can exchange information of some kind. I don't know. She's busy. She's trying to organize for this homeless union, which hasn't been too active lately, but did do a lawsuit that protected the people in the benchlands, along with she was one of the plaintiffs, I believe. Or she secured some people in the benchlands to do the lawsuit way back in the winter of 2020 when they were trying to run people out of there.
Yeah, okay. I see. Wow, I can see she's busy, and she's on it. She's really making a big contribution. She's not laying back and letting others do it for her. She's making it happen. We're doing what she can make it happen.
It's true, and she's also a target for the police. She's been fighting against police harassment, ticketing. What they do is, if they can't give her tickets, then they change the rules so they can start giving her tickets. They shorten the parking places. They set up no parking zones. It's pretty nasty stuff.
Yes. Yeah, Reggie said something yesterday about how the city is going to tighten up where they'll allow 3 days parking once a month for a vehicle. at a certain spot, something like that, he said.
Yeah, that's the law right now, or is it?
Yeah.
It was the previous law that you could only park, even on private property, even with the permission of the owner and the resident. If you wanted to park in their driveway, you would not be allowed to do so except for 3 days, 3 nights in a calendar month, which was... It's pretty ridiculous stuff. So
yeah, it's beyond ridiculous because it's private property. A person can park there as long as they damn well please if the property owner gives them permission.
Not in Santa Cruz. Now that's not. This is our special city now.
Oh yeah, it figures Santa Cruz authority would be that way. It really does.
they just climb into the power structure and they drive away, and then they they drive right over you, I might say.
Oh, they love their power trips, yeah.
Well, that's all I've got. I'm gonna roll and try to work some more on this show, unless there's something more you want to say.
Yeah. No, not more. Oh, just real quick, Ben Slans went down there after the Huff meeting Thursday, cruised down there, and cruised around slowly and spent a fair amount of time there and talked to one nice young man who was lucid and sane, and then interfaced with a couple of others who weren't so lucid and sane. But check that all out, and it looks pretty darn orderly. Things. I mean, there's still heaps of junk and textiles and whatnot, you know, clothing, blah blah, here and there. But people got it. It's looking pretty tidy, you know, after those winter rains. It's looking pretty good down there. And there were a bunch of porta potties.
How are they? How are the conditions in them? Did you check them out?
Yeah, I used two different ones on two different occasions that while down there on Thursday, and they're fine. The truck pulled up to pump them out and service the outhouses, you know, while I was there. So it being taken care of, you know, everything looked fine.
That's good. I'm glad you were checking. How long did you spend down there?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Better part of an hour, cruised around, and from one end to the other. I was looking for Goatman Kevin.
You know where he lives, right?
No, I'd been told he was stayed at the north end, upriver end.
Yeah, he's at the
Water Street.
The end closest to Water Street. You'll find him, and you'll find where his goats are penned. It's the first stairway down. If you look at the stairway that comes down from the upper park into the benchlands, right from, it's kind of on a parallel with the courthouse, the back of the courthouse.
Okay, because I was all the way up there and underneath the Water Street Bridge, and I didn't see the other side of it to the north, and didn't see any goat livestock.
That's too far. You gotta go. Okay. You gotta start heading up toward. Head up toward. Toward the duck pond. But don't go past, it's about the middle of the business, the complex of the building that's, part of it is the court and part of it is the county building. And right in the middle, if you go down, there's a stairway that goes down to the benchlands. He is actually directly to the right of that stairway as you go down it.
Okay, well, I didn't see any pins or any four-legged critters down there, so he must have.
Well, I think he covers it up at times with a tarp, particularly if it's inclement weather. I don't know. I think it was pretty good weather on Thursday, but.
Okay, good. I'll go again and look more closely because I'd like to meet the guy. I'm fascinated by people that take their herds around because the goats make great they're browsers, and so they're wonderful for. I mean, people hire out small herds of goats to eat down the weeds and whatnot. When it's fire season, the fire department expects property to be cleaned up and stuff. There are people out there.
Yeah, and they're cute too. So.
Yeah, they are. They're cute and fun.
Just watch out. They might eat your pants. So be careful.
yeah, exactly. They do tend to like to chew on things like that.
Hey, you. I will talk to you later. I'm going to roll on.
All right. Great. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, thank you, man.
See you Thursday, if not talking sooner, okay?
All right, Thursday at the Huff meeting, 11 o'clock at Sub Rosa. Everybody's invited.
Yes, everyone's invited. Come on down. Bye now.
Bye-bye. That's 703 Pacific for all you who are interested. 11 to 1, Thursdays. And that's about it for the contemporary Here and Now edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides for this particular Sunday. There's still an anti-war protest going on, probably at the town clock if you want to make it. And there's a protest coming up on Tuesday.
the vigil against two wars, war on the poor and the war in Ukraine, that creates massive numbers of homeless refugees. You might be interested in checking that out. We're probably going to be circulating a petition demanding some kind of local action against both wars. And you could find out more by looking in at the Huff table, which is going to be across from the movie theater in front of O'Neill's from noon to 1 o'clock, maybe longer, at Cooper and Pacific Avenue. So instead of our usual flashback, we're going to have a nearly a full hour's review or replay of the K-Squid March, I guess it's March 8th show, which Chris Krohn hosted, former mayor, council member Chris Krohn, an activist, also one of the few city council members who's ever had me arrested, and prompting a $100,000 lawsuit that nobody won. Well, actually, it was at various victors, but nobody got any money out of it. The city spent over $100,000 defending the right of mayors to shut down members of the public who were raising issues they didn't want to hear about. That's how I viewed it anyway. But Krohn has an interesting show with guests ranging from Keith McHenry to Joy Kuldecker and various other folks around the issues of the oversized vehicle ordinance, as well as the two-year anniversary of Food Not Bombs, which, as I mentioned before, is being celebrated even as we speak, if you're listening to this at the usual broadcast time or netcast time on Sunday the 13th. So on the program, although not for as long as I would have liked, is the chair of the Planning Commission, which ratified the OVO ordinance or okayed its permit, so they'd made some sort of prefabricated changes to it, Cindy Dawson. And I'm going to let this sort of just roll forward, but I'm going to make a couple of brief comments before it does. It really needs a more elaborate analysis, which I didn't take the time, or perhaps didn't have the time, or couldn't find the motivation to put together before this show. And really, the time is late, because the appeal is, I think I may have mentioned before, the deadline may be tomorrow, the 14th of March, if you're actually listening to this on the 13th. The issue, according to Reggie Meisler, who is, along with the ACLU and the disability rights advocates, who are the people who are doing the main appeals against this ordinance and urging that it be not be given a permit. And the main reason I've seen for not doing so in the coastal zone is it bars coastal access. The Coastal Commission in the past, 6 years ago, refused to give it a stamp of approval for two basic reasons. One was because there was a claim of a crime problem associated with people living in their RVs that was not proven. And there was essentially a form of prejudice and bigotry. That's how some commission members saw it. And then, secondly, there were no real storage facilities for vehicles in or near the coastal zone in Santa Cruz. And that hasn't changed. Those are really, I think, the substantive arguments. But the Planning Commission normally is the body that examines an ordinance like this OVO ordinance before it goes to City Council. At least I think that's the case. Maybe I'm wrong. And it didn't go through the Planning Commission. And so really, the Planning Commission had the right to examine it now that it came back to them, I would think. I would think they would want to suggest to the City Council, in spite of the COVID crisis, that there should be this preliminary step before things go to the city council so the public can actually have real input. I didn't hear the whole long 3-hour or more planning commission debate, and maybe it was brought up there, but it was not, I've not carefully listened to this. I just sort of skipped through this K-Squid Chris Krohn interview of Cindy Dawson, but I'm not aware that Dawson or anybody else mentioned that it was sort of outrageous that the city council didn't actually send it through the planning commission initially, this OVO law. The things that aren't mentioned that I noted was the changes that the planning commission made in the OVO law, which could reasonably be called improvements, but weren't really enough improvements, were done by a bad process, which is to say a council member, or I should say a commission member, Andy Schifrin, came with this prefabricated, very elaborate proposal that was all worked out beforehand. This is something usually that people we don't like on the city council do, or staff members do, and then just sort of shovel it through or ram it through the city council. And this is what was happening here. It seemed to me, although it got a lot of debate, and there was a proposal. One of the reasons this whole thing was appealed to the Planning Commission was in order to delay it to give the public more time. That could have been done by essentially what the minority, the people who actually are in favor of stricter restrictions on OVOs, wanted to do, was to send it back to the staff to essentially kick out the positive changes that the Schifrin proposal had. I understand what was going on. However, 4-3 vote simply sent it directly to City Council with a recommendation that it be approved. And the strategy here was the City Council is going to be put into an embarrassing position of it will have to send it back to its staff to do that. But it could have been reasonably sent back to the staff of the Planning Commission, which would have delayed it, one would think, still further. But it's really hard to say how to judge which would give the public more time for input into this. There was talk of that the changes at the Schifrin proposal, which was ultimately voted, removed some of the barriers for people getting into the programs that have been preventing people from getting in for the last few years, although there hasn't been much space in the programs anyway. But the reality is there really aren't, it's really insufficient programs to begin with. So to talk about that is like suggesting you're going to tinker with, the paint job on the Titanic as it goes down. It's not a seaworthy ship to begin with. And also what I noticed in the latest city manager's report on homelessness is the city is now claiming that because, as I think I've mentioned before earlier in the broadcast, the enforcement of the camping ban on the ground, which is the CSSO, was to be delayed until such time as there was so many storage spaces, so many camping spots, so many other facilities for homeless folks to use. So because supposedly the city council wanted to be very humane, in reality they wanted to get around the legal requirements that had thrown out the camping ban citations. That is the Martin versus Boise decision. What actually happened is the city has just simply designated the benchlands as a sanctified sanctioned campground. And it's not really, it has inadequate facilities. And of course, it's likely it was already flooded once and could be flooded again. And it's crowded, although perhaps less crowded than it was. And they're throwing everybody in there with the threat that if they don't go in there, they will be given these serious citations that lead to misdemeanors and seizure of property and even possibly jail time. The camping ban, the old sleeping ban that many of us have fought for so long against. No reason that the OVO ordinance isn't going to suffer the same kind of enforcement and kind of redefinition, bait and switch, change of terminology. Indeed, in the original OVO ordinance, there isn't even a sentence that says there'll be no enforcement until there's adequate storage facilities. That just sort of suddenly rushed to the zoning administrator who is reviewing this and giving the stamp of approval right before it was given the stamp of approval. But the ordinance was something that was passed by the city council, and the staff just can't suddenly come running in and state, here's some quick changes in the law. The law requires two readings, public hearings, and two votes by the city council, and that was not given that. So the reassurance that there is actually no enforcement until there are adequate spaces, even on paper, doesn't really exist. And even if it existed on paper, as it did with the CSSO ordinance, which stated something like 150, have to be space for 150 people and storage facilities for people to put their stuff into before there'll be any enforcement during the day and during the night of people who are sleeping outside, we have seen massive enforcement. People are being driven away from their spaces on the levee most recently, and then earlier Paradise area next to the river around the cemetery, before that at Highway 1 and Highway 9 in front of the Funding Matters 115 Coral Street complex. They call it Housing Matters, but looks like they're concerned about money and not about really providing housing for me. That's how I view it anyway. And so what is actually written in the law doesn't seem to matter, because the city, either the, and it's not just the police, it's the city manager, then changes, in essence, the meaning of the words. Suddenly, plans has become a sanctioned campground, which means it's one of these temporary sanctioned campgrounds that's being used to eliminate all other camping areas around town, and then it itself will be eliminated at a snap of the fingers of the authorities, which is something that they, I don't know how they can get away with it unless they feel that the courts are going to pay no attention to Martin versus Boise, which may very well be the case given the right-wing U.S. Supreme Court. And the fact also that attorneys don't seem willing to do any challenging here of the ordinance. And people can be bullied. The reason that attorneys with the ACLU claim, I've not heard this directly from them, but I am suggesting that one of the reasons they say they may not be going after it, I think that's what Alicia Kuhl said in her discussion, her justification for inaction by the homeless union, is that there haven't been any enforcement attempts actually under the law, no tickets issued. Yes, but the police have used enforcement threats to move hundreds of people away from where they were sleeping against their wishes into the campground, into areas where they don't want to be. And so it doesn't really matter if they're issuing tickets or not. If they're threatening to issue tickets and people can be frightened into moving, it has exactly the same effect. Comments about this kind of rather obscure and convoluted process that this ordinance is going through to get these special kind of permits that will say it passes muster with giving adequate coastal access, which it doesn't, of course, but which was really kind of a foregone rubber stamp by the various bodies of the Santa Cruz City government. But let's hear what Kay Squid, Chris Crone, Keith McHenry, and Joy Decker have to say about this, and some other folks as well. And just a final reminder, join us Tuesday noon in front of O'Neill's at the corner of Cooper and Pacific, and help us round up signatures and pass out flyers to essentially oppose these laws that criminalize homeless people and suggest different strategies for people to resist and for members of the community to support that kind of resistance.